with you here in the Green Zone on a Tuesday afternoon. Still coming up, Britton Gray looks back at week one, looks ahead to week two in the CFL, which means the Riders back to practice today. He'll bring you up today. But right now, we're going to take you to New York City, the scene of game three last night of the NBA Finals. Stephen Wino of the Associated Press was in the building and experienced. Well, let's start outside the building first, Stephen. How hectic was it trying to get into game three last night?
Yeah, it was nuts. And obviously with Donald Trump in attendance, there was the sort of TSA-style Secret Service, NYPD, all these like barricades around the Garden, which was sort of like, after living in D.C. for so long, you're sort of used to it with whenever there's a presidential visit. But it's certainly like there were lines snaking around the blocks going all the way down to almost Herald Square, which is three blocks or two avenues over. And it was, everybody got in, but it was certainly a hassle that the people had to plan their days to be able to get into the building. Some people lining up as early as 4 o'clock for an 8:42 tip off.
Stephen, I went off last year at the Grey Cup because Mark Carney, our leader, showed up to flip the coin, and they shut down half the building and caused major delays. I'm so against political figures attending sporting events. You have no, this isn't even a political situation. Just like, stay home, watch it on your gold TV. I'm curious, are New Yorkers blaming Trump for the loss? Because they're a rather irrational fan base.
Well, I think every fan base is irrational. Let's start with that. I do think so, in a way that all the routines that have sort of happened during this Knicks run, the watch parties outside Madison Square Garden and all of that, weren't able to take place because of Trump's appearance. So, yeah, there's a certain segment of the fan base, many of the folks who were booing last night, certainly who believe that the vibe was thrown off by the president being in attendance. Now, the real reason why the Knicks lost was they turned the ball over. They didn't rebound as well. Their offense went stagnant, all that. But, yeah, there was something off about the vibe in the building last night and around the Knicks because of this.
What is this run? Take us to New York. What has this run been like for New York City, Knicks in the NBA final for the first time since 99, and of course haven't won since 73. They go up 2-0 in this series. Like, can you compare it to anything in recent memory, Steve, on, you know, New York coming alive for a sports team or anything like that, like a Yankees run to the World Series?
Having been in Edmonton for the Cup Final the past 2 years, it's a little bit similar to that, except there's way more people and the city is on fire. I don't mean literally, but just everywhere you go, people are wearing Knicks things. I was trying to go out and watch the game in San Antonio, game two. You couldn't get a seat anywhere without a reservation. And this was on the Upper East Side. It's nowhere near Madison Square Garden. I just moved to New York from Washington in July, but it became very clear last year during the run and now that nothing runs New York City like the Knicks. Because in this city, you've got split allegiances, Yankees, Mets. You've got Rangers, Islanders, Devils. You've got Giants, Jets. Everyone's a Knicks fan. I'm sorry to the Brooklyn Nets, but everyone's a Knicks fan here. And so there's this gigantic city of people who love sports, and they're all Knicks fans, and it's a basketball town. You know, you've seen like the NCAA tournament, the Big East college basketball tournament. It's always great here. St. John's basketball, all that. I can't explain. Maybe the Habs got to a Cup final, what it sort of means.
Yeah.
It's almost like a religion. The Knicks are almost like a religion in New York, like hockey is in a place like Montreal.
I was trying to explain to my wife who Wemby was. We started watching the tournament, and she's not a big basketball fan, but we've got it on, and I've been intrigued by this matchup. And so he looks not out of place. The alien thing is perfect because he looks like he's from another planet, but it must be even more intriguing seeing him live, Stephen.
Yeah, you're right. He's an alien, and it's crazy. We're watching from up in the hockey press box. I can't imagine what it's like courtside to watch a 7'4" guy who is as athletic as Victor Wembanyama is. And just he's a freak. He's a cheat code. Basketball players aren't supposed to be able to do the things he does. Obviously, his height is a big part of it. But there's a lot of 7'4" people. There aren't. But you can have that size and then just not use it. And it's just, it was a pleasure to, for the first time ever, to watch him in person last night and see everything he can do inside, out, shooting threes, all this sort of thing, where it's like, sort of like when you're watching Conor McDavid and you're like, LeBron James, those sort of things. Tom Brady was in his prime. Like, people shouldn't be able to do these things. And it's really cool. And I'll say off the court, guys, that he's the most mature 22-year-old I've ever sort of seen. Hmm. English is not his first language, but he'll listen to your question. He'll process it. He'll think about it. Maybe the word doesn't come to him because English isn't his first language. I can't imagine how great he is as a talker in French, but he's a really thoughtful guy. And certainly deserves the mantle of being the face of the NBA, maybe the face of sports for the next decade.
Stephen Wino, Associated Press in New York, was at Game 3 last night. But the night or the day before, it's not like Victor Wembanyama can walk around New York City anonymous at 7'4". but there he is in a park drawing a picture of Edwin Booth, a Shakespearean actor, the day before a huge... the mentality and the calmness in such a pressure environment in New York City with New Yorkers around taking photos of him, does that open a window to who this guy is? Like, that picture you painted as a lead to your article, I was like, what? Victor Wembanyama is drawing a statue ahead of one of the biggest games of his life is crazy to me.
Yeah, he's just a fascinating human being in that he's not just about basketball. And he's obviously, this is obviously his job, and he's very good at it. But he has a very interesting way of looking at sports and life that is refreshing to hear an athlete say. We're so used to some athletes being robots and talking one game at a time and this sort of stuff. And Wembanyama feels like he's a sort of a citizen of the world, a very worldly person at 22 years old, which a lot of us at 40 years old can't even imagine being. And you see it. You sort of see it when you watch him, and after you hear that sort of stuff and you watch him play, you sort of get a greater appreciation for, look, he wants to win, obviously, just like every great athlete wants to win, but that he doesn't, I don't think he takes it home with him. I think he's able to compartmentalize life and basketball and those sort of things, which is probably what makes him a great player.
That is Stephen Wino, Associated Press. More with Steve. We're going to flip it over. He covers hockey full-time in New York City. So let's get his take on the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah.
And I wonder what he thought when the Mike Babcock news broke yesterday as he was trying to get into Madison Square Garden for the NBA finals. More with Stephen Wino of the Associated Press next on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Well, a good Tuesday afternoon. We're getting ready for Game 4 of the Stanley Cup final tonight after 2 days off and still no word on who's going to start in goal for the Carolina Hurricanes.
Bussy.
You're going Bussy?
I'm Bussy. I'm putting him in. He looked great in that third period.
I'm starting to think it's going to be him too. Maybe. Because Rod Brind'Amour is being very quiet.
He's very loyal, though.
Yes, he is.
Very loyal.
We'll see who it is coming out of warm-ups tonight in about, what is that, an hour away in Vegas. As we continue our conversation, Associated Press reporter out of New York City is Stephen Wino, main beat covering the Rangers and the Islanders and the Devils for the National Hockey League with the Associated Press. So, Stephen, what do you think of this Stanley Cup final through three games heading into Game 4 tonight?
I always felt going to a series like Vegas was better. I just, for whatever reason, it felt to me that the Golden Knights were a buzzsaw team, like Jared Bednar said, after getting stuff in the West Final. That it was just that. And midway through game two, and with even 12 minutes left in game two, it's like, well, this is going to be a lopsided series. And Carolina showed us something in the last 11 minutes of that game of regulation and in overtime. Yeah. Hurricanes even had that bounce back where you from a 4-0 deficit the other night. That I think we're going to learn real quick tonight, probably in the first 5-10 minutes, but certainly by the end of the night, if the Hurricanes have this series. So I think if Vegas wins tonight, I think it's over. I can't see the Hurricanes stringing together three consecutive wins against the Golden Knights the way they're playing under John Tortorella right now. But you're sort of hoping, just from a hockey fan standpoint, that this turns into one of those epic series, because we've had three epic games so far. These have been tight games, but sometimes you have great games that one team ends up on the winning side of it every single time, and it winds up being a sweep or a five-game series and a little bit more lopsided. But we're gonna find out a lot about Rod Brind'Amour and sort of how the Hurricanes can adjust tonight.
I'm very curious about your thoughts about the league and how everyone sort of copies how things are done, right? And a lot of times we're talking about what happens on the ice. Oh, they did this. The defensive core did this, or they've got this type of a setup, or you know, they're doing this kind of a, you know, a trap or whatever. And then we build a team around that. You know, everyone tries to mimic that the next year. But I think the bigger storyline this year, Stephen, is how Vegas conducts their business off the ice. And I'm curious if you think that is going to be sort of a template for other teams moving forward.
I don't think to the level Vegas does it. I do wonder, specifically with the Bruce Cassidy situation, if other teams start to be like, look, why are we giving permission? Like, if we have the right to keep our rival from hiring our coach, who we think is a good coach, but just wanted to sort of change the voice, whatever, that I think maybe that sets a little bit of a template.
Yeah.
But I still think there's a respect around hockey that most organizations want to run a certain way. Vegas has been able to be as cutthroat as Kelly McCrimmon has been and Bill Foley has been because the Golden Knights have won. And so if you treat people a certain way and don't win, no one's going to go sign there. But look at Dylan Larkin. He wants to go to Vegas, Florida, or Minnesota because for various reasons, but because the Golden Knights win. It's not just a state income tax. I'm sure that helps. But this is an organization that has shown an ability to win. And Thomas Hertl waves a no-trade to go there. Noah Hannafin waves a no-trade to go there. Jack Eichel wants to go there. Mark Stone goes there. That it's a winning organization. I don't think the rest of the league is going to go exactly like that, but I do wonder on the coaching front specifically if more teams are going to have a fired coach and say, you know what? No, we'd rather just pay this guy out than have him beat us in the playoffs next year.
Wow.
Final one, Stephen. Going through your TSA security protocols to get into the building last night, and then you hear a beep on your phone, and you look down, and there's rumblings about Mike Babcock being the next head coach of the Edmonton Oilers. What were your initial thoughts?
I got a call from a colleague this morning. We were talking about NBA, and he's like, are the Oilers really hiring Mike Babcock? And I was like, yeah, I think they're really hiring Mike Babcock. I'm baffled. I thought Columbus was Mike Babcock's last chance, and maybe we're all sort of overthinking this, and he is a good coach, and it works out. And there, a year from now, we're talking about Babcock in the Stanley Cup final with Edmonton. But it sure is hard to see Mike Babcock the way he coached. I think he's the perfect Olympic coach. Honestly, like we saw this in 2010-14 that for a short tournament, he gets a lot out of everybody, just like John Tortorella during this run has gotten a lot out of the Golden Knights in a very short period of time. I don't know with younger players, modern-day players, how Mike Babcock's going to be able to adjust. But I guess we're going to find out because this is it seems out of left field as a hire. If they had gone to anyone else, if they had hired Pierre Laviolette, if they had hired Craig Berube, it wouldn't have been all that shocking. It's stunning, and we're going to have a fun time watching how this turns out.
Yes, we will. That is Stephen Owino, Associated Press in New York City. He'll be in the building again for game number 4. Trump won't be there, so people can watch outside again and not take 2.5 hours to get through security to go watch a basketball game and Donald Trump nap during the second quarter.
With the Babcock hiring in Edmonton, if that's going to happen, I'm really concerned about the players' feelings.
I see what you did there. It's the new era. You have to.
Oh, the poor guys.
You have to worry about the millionaires' feelings.
I'm really, you know.
I can't wait for the first film session with Evan Bouchard.
It's such a sensitive group.
That's going to be next level.
You know, like.
Because you need to do it. You need to sit back.
You need to worry about their feelings.
And you sit Bouchard
Jimmy
down
Nye.
And have a clip of every defensive error he's made over a year and go, do you want to win a Stanley Cup? We can't see that. We can't have that.
But what if he's having a bad day?
And then bring Connor McDavid in.
What if Starbucks messed up his coffee order, Jamie Nye?
And then bring
McDavid in. I'm concerned about these players.
And say, you see all these lazy back checks? Call yourself the best player in the world? Now let me show you a film of Sidney Crosby. There. That's how you win a Stanley Cup. Jamie and Locker with you here on The Green Zone. Well, it was a day for the Gabriel Landeskog and his family over the last week at some point. cameras arrived at his household.
And
they rolled in the Bill Masterton Leadership Memorial Trophy.
I should have won that last year.
I thought so.
But they make amends.
They're like, there's no chance he's not winning it after getting through a full season. You remember, he only played like two or three games in that comeback before the voting happened for the Masterton. But this year, he wins the Masterton. So they give him that trophy. And then they wheel in another one, as he also won the Mark Messier Leadership Award in the National Hockey League as well.
That's nice.
For the captain of the Colorado Avalanche.
What do you think about how they've been doing these awards?
There's not going to be an awards night in Vegas because they're all doing these videos.
Yeah.
I think it's better because the NHL awards were terrible. Like, you'd have an awkward comedian trying to make jokes and nobody would laugh because they're way too serious and uptight about it.
That's what I always loved about the ESPN awards, was like Shane Gillis or a...
Yeah, so...
Somebody would come out, Norm MacDonald, and it would just be so awkward.
So, you know, I don't think McDavid won the Hart because they gave McDavid the Ted Lindsay already. So
I think they are saving some. They are still doing some sort of an awards night, I think. Are they not?
I looked it up, and there's nothing really announced for 2026.
Well, they did these videos last year, and they still had an awards show. So I think there's a plan on doing something. Maybe it's a truncated version of it, or I don't know. Or
the players just want to go to Cabo, man. They don't want to go, although a trip to Vegas for an NHL awards, I don't think
they're not whining about
be
that.
Too worried about, but.
But hold on. We should check with them. Just make sure they're okay with it. Because we want to make sure that their feelings are taken into consideration, Jamie.
You'd be a terrible manager right now.
That's why I am behind a mic, Jamie Nye.
Bill Masterton Memorial Trophy.
I already did that dance. It didn't go well.
And the Mark Messier Leadership Award going to Gabriel Landeskog of the Colorado Avalanche, who would much rather be going up against the Carolina Hurricanes in the Stanley Cup final.
And I'd much rather see them there.
I'd much rather see him as well in the Stanley Cup final with the Vegas Golden Knights. And we'll find out shortly in warm-ups who's actually going to start in net for Carolina. Jamie Locker with you here on the Green Zone. Well, the other day, on a Green Zone post-game show, you remember, I know it's been a while. We were doing game days again. We are doing game days again. But it's been a minute. It's been like 3 weeks since our last game day because of this huge break in action for the Rough Riders. But yes.
You should have gone on vacation. Why didn't you?
Because I'm leaving at the end of the month on vacation. Okay. Remember?
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
I have a wedding to go to.
That's right.
So
weird time to go down there.
Hey, do cerveza por favor. I've trying to perfect that.
It's going to be hot, man.
It is going to be hot. I'll be in the pool.
Is it hurricane season?
Not yet.
Good. Okay.
Not yet. Okay. Might be a little wet, though. But anyways, we're on the game days, and Darren from Rosh Percy, who 2 years ago made a bet that the Riders would go 13-5, and we immediately took him up on that opportunity, and he lost the bet. And he brought in, it was a steak bet, and he brought in a smoker.
He lived up to it.
Oh, absolutely. And they were delicious.
But hold on.
It might have been the best steak I have ever eaten in my life. It was that good.
Let's have a conversation about what that day cost him.
It was an expensive bet. I'm not denying it.
That was $200+ worth of meat on that grill.
It didn't go to waste, I can tell you that. Belton almost missed most of the show because he would not leave the boardroom where we were eating the steaks. And I'm like, we got to go back on the air, Belton. And he's like, just a minute. And he was trying to finish that thing off in 10. It was impressive. So Darren called 2 weeks ago to re-up the bet. 13-5. Saskatchewan Rough Riders.
I like his confidence. Some might suggest this is a dumb bet with where the league is going. I mean, Winnipeg, Zach back, full health. You got Vernon Adams Jr. starting to figure it out in Calgary. You got
the Nathan Rourke effect in BC.
Has Hervey built a better defense and a better team around Cody in Edmonton?
Is Ottawa better? Montreal is still good.
It might be one
of
those.
Is Toronto with Chad Kelly going to be better?
It might be one of those years where everyone's at 500.
1-877-332-8255. Who's winning the bet? 13-5 from Darren and Rosh Percy. As the Riders get set this Saturday, it is the opening game against the BC Lions. But here's the thing. We had two callers. Wayne and Sean both called at the same time and said 8-10. And they both said...
I disagree with that.
They're worried Trevor Harris won't stay healthy as he tipped over the 40 mark a couple of weeks ago. Happy belated birthday to Trevor Harris, by the way. 8-10?
No.
13-5? Belton's in the middle. He's going 11-7. I'm in that area as well. 1-877-332-8255. And so, David, what do you think? What's your pick for how the Riders are going to do this season?
I got the Riders at 9, maybe 10 wins. I think they'll have a hard time duplicating last year simply because when you look at last year and... I mean, going into the season, we didn't know for sure, but when you look at the production that Myers and Neal give us through the year, I think they'll have a hard time replacing that with Dell Bunk and Busby, because even though he may have a breakout year, he has to do it before I'm a believer, and I think Mitch Picton was probably a better receiver than Bunk.
Really?
Dell Dunk and Busby last year. I think when he was more clutch anyways, let's put it that way. I mean, obviously Busby's younger and got more upside, but... But I got them at 9 or 10. And if they get the 10, that might be good for second, depending. I got the Lions at about 13 wins. Then Saskatchewan, Edmonton, and Winnipeg, all very close, 8 to 10 wins, depending who beats who.
David, can I ask you a quick question?
Yes.
Did you have Edmonton at that spot last week?
At that spot?
Well, second, yeah, or third?
Yes. I'm the guy that called in and said, I think the Elks got a great chance of going to the Grey Cup.
Here we go. Okay. All right. Here we go.
All right, David.
You know what? That the way their defense looked, I mean, it was a crappy day, but the way their defense looked the other day, they might have the best defense in the West. And I still think they got a shot at it. But I think Calgary's going to drop down to maybe 7. And I think it's a dogfight between Winnipeg, Edmonton, and Saskatchewan for second and fourth.
David, thanks for the call. 1-877-332-8255. So another hardcore Rider fan who's got a little bit of hesitation on the 2025 Grey Cup champions. They got to 12 last year to win the West.
What is that?
I understand it. Trevor Harris is 40. They lose Malik Kearney and CJ Revis and AJ Allen.
But
Johnson retires. So there's those types of things. BC got better. And like, we've laid it out on the reason why. Is it's going to be a lot harder to win this year, I think.
I get that.
And they only got, well, not only, 12-6 is an amazing season. They got to 12 last year. So if you think everybody's better, how can you predict 12 again? With the losses and those types of things.
That's
the logic. 1-877-332-8255. Call it. What's your win prediction? Oh, my goodness. Dave wants to go 15-3 for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders.
That's strong.
That is a bit high for a win total, I believe, this year for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. What are your predictions for the win total in Saskatchewan? Let us know now at 1-877-332-8255 here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Jamie and Locker with you on a Tuesday afternoon here on the Green Zone. Of course, some weather watches going on in Saskatchewan right now. There is a yellow. Warning.
Fire just the yellow alarm button.
Northwest of Regina is.
We don't have an alarm for that. For yellow
warning. I don't want to get started on this again, but
I think
yellow watches, yellow warnings, orange watches, orange warnings, red watches, red warnings.
If you can, if you
instead of just here's a watch and here's a warning,
if you squint, it's almost orange. It's going to get orange.
Apparently. That's what my grandfather called it when he would go through a yellow slash red light. He just said that one was orange. I'd be like, ooh, that was tight one, Grandpa. That was orange. Okay. But we've had a completely wide scale of predictions here for the Riders season. 8 yeah. wins, 10 wins, 11 wins, 12, 13, and now 15 wins.
I think 15 is a little... I want you to be right, Dave, but I think you should hang on to that betting part of that one.
1-877-332-8255. Jim is somewhere in the middle. He's saying 10-8 season for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders as they get set to take on the BC Lions at Mosaic Stadium this Saturday.
The one thing I think that you've got is you've got this is Corey Mace's
third year.
You've got a pretty established coaching crew. They're not messing around. I mean, every time we talk to Britton, what does Britton say? He's going to come in here. We're going to be talking about, you know,
yep.
practice day one of practice before Saturday's game. And it's just business as usual. They've got their routines down. Boom. They're out. Bop, 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 bop. Corey Mace has his message. He's clear, concise. I don't know. I think they've also.
Corey runs the most organized practice I have seen out of any Rider coach. Like, they are efficient. They are ready.
Listen, they lost a lot of guys, right? There's a lot of conversation about all the guys that got paid last year and went to Ottawa and Edmonton. And like, we did lose some talent, but I don't know. I think there's that basic structure, and I think they're also really good at finding guys that fit into the chemistry slash culture, whatever you want to call it. And I don't think it's crazy to suggest that this team could duplicate the success they had last year, regardless of the competition.
Like, I think this season is going to be like an 11-7, 2-11-7 teams. A 10-8 team, 9-9, and
I don't think you're wrong.
10 in the West,
them battling BC for first. Though.
I think it's going to be right down to the last couple of weeks, and I think everybody will be in it in the West Division. And then there's Toronto. I have zero clue we're going to get out of the Toronto Argonauts.
The wild card, yeah.
And Ottawa got off to a little bit of a hiccup again this season, and you go, oh man. Do they have the right quarterback in Jake Mayer or Drew Brown to really get that team over the hump with Ryan Dinwiddie? We will see. 1-877-332-8255. What do you think? We've had 15 wins, 13, 12, 11, 10, 8. And then Sean upped his to 9-9 because he didn't want to steal Wayne's thunder on the 8-10 prediction. But how do you think this Rider season is going to go? Let us know now.